Well, I'm really honored that Bruce Dingman is all the way here from Westlake, California. It's exciting to have him here. I want to start out by saying, first of all, he is a man of character and principle. And when you get somebody like that in your presence, you have a lot to learn from, right? You have a lot to experience, as I know he's going to share with us. That, first of all, he's a student not only of the hiring process, but he's a student of people, which I admire in him. He's a teacher, and at the same time, he is also a writer. You should see some of his newsletters. In fact, I printed out, and I don't do this with people's newsletter, but I printed out his newsletter, the first 20 pages that I saw, because it was just one tip after another, one idea, practical stuff. So he is definitely a servant leader. And if I haven't said he's a class guy, and it's an honor to have him here, I need to say it again, if you haven't got that point. His firm has been ranked in only $5. It's worth more than $5, isn't it? His firm has been ranked in the top 200 search firms in the United States. In fact, even earlier, with his brother running the firm, it was ranked even higher than that. Yeah, he's going to tell us the details on that kind of thing.
I'll get it to you straight.
Yeah. He has a heart not just for business, of course, where he spends 70% of his time, but he spends 30% of his time helping ministries as a Christian, giving back. And we talked about it last night, it's his 401k, you know, set up in heaven, right? Setting up treasures in heaven, that's what it's all about. But he's a real giving guy and a servant of the Lord, and it's exciting to have him here and talk about hiring key executives. Let's give him a big round of applause.
Thank you, John. It's good to be here with you. To come to Jacksonville and to speak to 30 Christian CEOs, and I think the accent is probably more on that you're Christian than you're CEO. And I share that with you also. I think there's probably been a number of things that we share together. Saved by grace, and we never want to forget it. How many of you also worked for other people before you had your own company? And how many of you are entrepreneurs?
No, I'm not getting it. Okay, hold up. The microphone's not working. Keep your hands up if you're entrepreneurs.
Entrepreneurs. It's got the red light.
The red's on. Stand
by for you.
I just turned
mine
off.
You just said.
Okay, you want to take it off?
Exactly.
Maybe that battery's not working right. Entrepreneurs.
This is the quick. This is the quick.
We have a wardrobe malfunction.
They hustle.
We just stand by.
That's it.
Talk to me just a second.
We're going to see if this is coming across any better. Now we've got action.
You want to start over again?
Yeah. So it's great to come to Jacksonville to be with 30 Christian CEOs, and I think the accent is more on Christian than CEO. How many of you used to work for yourselves? Used to work for other people, okay, and how many now work for yourselves? How many are entrepreneurs? And probably one of the more difficult things that you experience from time to time is how do you find somebody who's just right to work for your company? And so that's what we're going to try and talk about today, is how to hire the right executives for that. One of the things that's important in hiring the right people is going to be in understanding yourself. Because if you're trying to match somebody else up to you so that there's going to be the right fit, you really need to know something about yourself. So let's start off with a little test for entrepreneurs. And I call this a blessed affliction. So I think each of you will have in front of you this little test, and we'll just go through it quickly, because there are certain characteristics of entrepreneurs that are great and some that we have to learn to manage. So the first one, and you can grade yourselves 1 through 10, 10, boy, is that me, and 1, not me at all. But the first one is, I'm a risk taker, willing to try new things. That's a blessing. Okay, and the second one is the affliction, not process-oriented. don't value developing a method for consistently doing the same thing. May want to see the process develop, but I just don't have the time to do it myself or to expend the resources of my people. It just isn't that important. Blessing number two, has contagious enthusiasm, a charismatic person. Boy, I really get excited about what my company is about. Then affliction number two, this especially takes place with inside your organization sometimes, the strength of the person's personality, the intensity of their convictions, and their level of self-confidence sometimes comes across so strong that my people could be intimidated or they think there's no room for having a different point of view. Anybody identify with that? And then blessing number three, has high energy, gives relentlessly of himself or herself, and never seems to stop. Affliction number three, has difficulty in maintaining balance of priorities in his or her life. That means time with family, spiritual life, reflection, or self-improvement. They just aren't on his or her radar. Blessing number four, has strong convictions. His values are very important to him or her. Affliction number four, moves so fast, thinks so fast, that people may not feel valued and may be unintentionally hurt. Blessing number five, an optimist, has a can-do attitude, always thinks things can be accomplished. Affliction number five, not as fiscally conservative as he should be, tends to spend money without counting the costs sufficiently. Blessing number six, innovative, lots of new ideas. And then the last one, the same one from a different perspective, suffers from the pillow syndrome, the impression of the last idea that sat on him. Moves quickly in a new direction, may abandon what he and his people have been working on because the new idea is so important. We're going to talk about executive matchmaking, which is really relationships with a commitment. In a sense, it's marriage in a business sense. It's mutually beneficial to both parties, and we want both parties to be caring for each other. So that's what we're going to end up talking about. And I would like to first give you a little background on myself and our firm. My brother is a generation older, and he started the firm. He's now retired. And I joined him in 86. We're now a firm of three recruiters and a staff of four. So you can see what it says up there. We've got a newer picture, but it's not a better picture now on our website. We are a boutique firm, small firm that works nationally. We have done work for about 60 Christian ministry or nonprofit organizations. So, for example, we've found 10 presidents for Christian colleges, universities, and seminaries, 10 headmasters or principals for Christian schools, and also found presidents for a lot of other Christian organizations like Young Life and Open Doors and International Bible Society. And it's our privilege to be able to use our talent for the Lord in that fashion. But most of our work is in the business world because we have to earn a living. I'm here today because I want to see better decisions made in getting the right people on the bus in the right seats, as Jim Collins talks about in his book, Good to Great. When I was younger, my wife said to me that there isn't going to be a single program, a single business success that makes it to heaven. Would everyone agree with that?
Yeah.
Only people will make it to heaven. I was not naturally inclined to be as much in touch with people as I should have been, and I had to change the way I related to people. I'm here today because I want to help others to be better at hiring the right people. Because those people being in the right spot is important not only to your company's success, but to their lives and to the witness of anybody that we're involved with. So Why don't we start by going through, well, let me back up first and say a little something else about our firm. We've been ranked among the top 50 search firms, never among the top 200, but I've been among the top 200 recruiters. Now, the people that come up with these lists, I don't know that they're accurate, but you know, if you make the list, it's better than a sharp stick in the eye. So it's nice to see that sort of acknowledgement. I actually came from a career in operations before I joined my brother in 86. So I'm not like a lot of consultants who are just theoretical. I've actually been there where the rubber meets the road, so I can relate to somebody who has a business that's trying to make it work the right way. Why don't we start with the 9 most common hiring mistakes? And when you go to fill a senior level position, and my talking today is all about the executive level. So when you're really talking about someone who is lower management or a professional or a worker bee, that's not where my giftedness is. And so some of the things I say today may not apply as fully in that arena. So it's really when we're talking about people who are executives. When you're going to fill a position, you need to have a plan of what your process is going to be. I don't think any of you would be likely to want to build a building or a house without having gotten an architect, without having developed a plan to say this is going to be the process. If you want to have good results in regards to filling a senior level position in your company, you need to have a plan, and you need to work the plan consistently. So one of the things that we would like to talk about is that you need to understand yourself. That's going to talk about, I didn't realize there was 2 sections to that one, sorry. Understanding yourself means defining your personality, your management style, your values, and then what is it you're going to want in the person in this position in order to be a good fit with that. Now, just like in a marriage, that opposites attract and opposites can be complementary. If you happen to be a CEO who's a big picture person, you may be looking for someone who's going to be good with the details. So you need to do the homework to understand what it is you're looking for, because if you don't do that homework, you may not be hiring somebody to fulfill the right position. You might be looking for traits that really aren't their gifting or really aren't the need. One of the problems also in hiring is hiring who's handy. So often when you go to fill a position, it can be, I don't have any extra time. How am I going to find the time to really do this right? I don't know where to go looking for them. I don't know how to do the interviewing. And so a person tends to hire who's handy. Well, they know us. We like them. They believe in our product. But oftentimes the Peter principle will be there, that they are now being hired in a position they really aren't going to be that competent at. So it can be a mistake to just hire who's handy. Applying enough resources is important. For example, if you're the CEO and you need to do this, and you may not have enough time, you may have somebody else who can do a fair amount of the legwork in trying to find and screen the candidates. But if they've already got a job that's got 120% of their time committed, how do you expect them to do it well? So you may need to offload some of either your time or their time in order for it to be available to apply to this. If you are trying to do it with only in-house resources, it can be a real limitation, and you may not end up with as many of good candidates as what you would like. Another aspect of making a mistake is if you only have one decent candidate. That's not hiring from strength, because that's one good candidate compared to who. It can be really hard to know if that's going to be the best person out there. Very few of us probably got married having only met one person that we liked. We probably have had a number of people that we dated. And this is also true in this aspect. Another aspect is that when you hire, think about down the road. Does this person have the potential for promotion if you're going to need somebody down the road that is going to be able to do more, or your company is growing? Oftentimes the Peter principle sets in a company, because as the company grows, the standards for excellence, what's needed from this position, grows in the quality that's needed from it, and maybe they don't have the ability to be successful now with higher expectations. So think about hiring somebody who's going to have that strength for you. CEOs oftentimes do make decisions on their own without getting much input. Let me suggest to you that doing a hiring in a vacuum can be dangerous. It's good to include some of your other people in this. Maybe you don't want the other people to be involved in interviewing all the candidates. But in actuality, it could be good to have a couple key people involved so that it's not just your input, but together you think this thing through. But before the person is hired, it can be a great idea to bring the candidate in and let them meet the people who are going to be working for them and be their peers, and then get the feedback from those people before you hire that person. In fact, I think it's a great idea if you take that candidate and spouse out to dinner with you and your spouse. Now, so often the CEO and the candidate are male and the spouse is a woman. And us guys, we need to pay attention to when our wife says they do or they don't like that candidate. They may not tell us why. God seems to have given them bigger neural bridges that their sensitivities are just better at that than oftentimes we are. So pay attention. If they can give you a red flag signal, remember that. It may help you to avoid making a mistake. And besides that, if you go against what they say, then they'll always say, well, I told you so. And who wants that?
Oh, wow. Amen.
Another aspect of making mistakes is checking references. And references should be people who've been really close to them. Not the brother-in-law or their pastor or their spouse, but rather their boss, their close peers, their subordinates, to do it in a 360-degree fashion. If you haven't checked 6, 8, or 10, hopefully spanning the last 10 years, you may not really know the person you're hiring. The best indicator of future performance is past performance. So we need to check references. I would also suggest that on the resume, make sure you've accounted for all periods of employment. If the person has a bachelor's degree, I want to take it from the time they got their bachelor's degree up to now. I want to know every time frame. And letters of references usually aren't worth the paper they're printed on. So don't put a lot of stock in letters of reference. When it comes to verifying degrees, it's easy to do. It may cost you a little bit. It's usually about $6.50 that the university will charge you to get a copy of the verification of their degree. But 10% of the time, we find executives will lie about their degrees. I mean, how often do we see it in the newspaper? You know, the head coach at Notre Dame had to give up his job not soon after he had gotten it because he had lied about a degree. Those sorts of things. Also, when it comes to reference checking, that if you're getting name, rank, and serial number, you may very well be dealing with a candidate that isn't that great. It's amazing. When a candidate is great, people don't tend to just say, I can tell you when they worked here and what their job was. But when they're good or less, then they're trying to protect themselves and they're just going to give you the name, rank, and serial number. So that's the key indicator. I also ask candidates, when they give me the information on references, give me home numbers for those references. Because sometimes at work, they don't feel like they can talk openly because it's company policy. But if you catch them at home, they'll talk more openly. This is a two-way street when it comes to hiring somebody. Don't fail to court the person. They need to know that you want them. And you need to make them feel special. You need to think about the way you're coming across to them, not just how are they impressing you. Don't be too self-serving in the way you approach this. Now let's move on to another aspect, which I call the nine unusual characteristics of exceptional leaders. And this will not necessarily apply all to you. It may not necessarily apply to all the candidates you might interview, but these are things that I think you'll end up finding make for exceptional leaders. The first one has a contagious enthusiasm. Enthusiasm is really a major aspect of being able to excite people, whether it's a customer or the employee. don't underestimate how important that can be if they're in that role, whether they're the CEO or if they're in charge of sales and marketing. Even if they're an operations person in regards to making your staff, your employees, be excited about the mission and their work, that can be important. Another aspect of it has to do with self-confidence. You need to try and get a reading on how high is this person's level of self-confidence. We see an awful lot of athletes and people in the entertainment world who have incredible high levels of self-confidence. But so often it's so very self-centered. It's so egotistical. But do we think about the people who were great and yet they also had humility? I think of Walter Payton, who was with the Chicago Bears. David Robinson, who was with the San Antonio Spurs. I think of Tom Landry, who was the coach of the Dallas Cowboys for many years. And John Wooden, who was coach at UCLA's basketball. Those guys had incredible leadership. They were incredibly effective. They had self-confidence, but they also had a humility. And I think God has called us as servants to have humility, but also self-confidence. And so we're trying to find out who's going to be an acceptable leader. I think there has to be a healthy level of self-confidence, but not with arrogance. The next aspect is going to be authenticity, that they are who they seem. They are open. Oftentimes going with that is a degree of accountability. For example, I sometimes will come across differently than how I intend. So my staff know that I want to know if I'm coming across different than how I intend. I want to be authentic. I'm trying to reflect Christ to people around me. And so if I'm not being authentic, if I'm being superficial or if I'm being pretentious, that's not going to work well. The next aspect has to do with stretches his or her people. As we oftentimes do searches, especially for Christian ministries, and I ask how much would people say that you stretch them, it's not uncommon for a person to say not that much, because they don't feel like they want to force their opinion on how hard somebody should work on a subordinate. But that's not leadership. If you stop and think about it, if we stretch people a lot, not to breaking, but beyond their comfort level, they will rise to a new level. They'll gain confidence in their ability to be at that level. They'll be more productive. And then we can then help them to rise to another level. That's to maximize their potential. So real leadership is going to be stretching one's people. And the next one, we need to support our people. We should not just leave them out there without giving them support. So, we need to support people. We need to give them the resources to do their job. Micromanaging people, unless there's a problem, shouldn't really be a positive aspect of one's management style. But you should stay close enough to know where they are. Have they got the resources to do things? I love to take away the excuses as to why people can't be successful. Part of that's giving them resources. Another aspect is encouraging innovation. We, as entrepreneurs, who tend to be rather creative, value innovation, but do we encourage it in our people? Because it's not just working smarter, it can be working smarter, coming up with new ways to do things. Another aspect of an exceptional leader is to keep learning. If a person doesn't keep learning, but the rest of the world keeps progressing, then somebody's actually moving backwards by not moving at all. For example, someone doesn't have to use the internet today to still be effective, but I find if they don't use the internet, they really have refused to progress. For me, they're not a candidate. Think about it. Another aspect is going to be the big picture perspective. Instead of just looking at the little things, do they really look at the big picture? Do they understand everything that's involved? Do they look beyond just accounting if they're the CFO? Do they look just at sales, or do they actually see how it affects the whole company? So we really want to see the attitude of seeing the big perspective. The big difference between someone who's a controller and always being a controller and a CFO is usually that aspect of the big picture. Can they see the whole company rather than just the numbers? And then there's one more I want to share with you, which is values both process and results. We know that results are important, but process is also important. We need to be able to work at what is our methodology for getting these things done. This isn't always the easiest thing. That one's left off on your sheet, isn't it? I'm sorry about that. If you had actually counted how many it was, we've only done 8 so far. This is the 9th. So having that value for both process and results is an important aspect of what we're looking for. Bureaucrats could be so risk-averse, they're so process-oriented, that they are ineffective in getting timely results. And on the other hand, some people can be so results-oriented that they don't realize that there is a need for having a systemization for how things get done. Now let's move on to 9 ways to find and hire better candidates. Oftentimes the first question that comes up when someone is looking to fill a position is, where am I going to find these candidates? And I quote a bank robber by the name of Eddie Sutton. Eddie Sutton was asked, why do you rob banks? And he said, because that's where the money is. So if you stop and think about it and you say, I need to find a controller. Well, where might this controller be? If you're looking for a certain degree of experience, then where are those types of companies or organizations that person could be at? Is there an association for controllers? Whether it's your local or state CP association. If you're looking for somebody who's going to have certain values, then might this person be involved in a group like Christian Businessmen's Committee or Fellowship of Companies for Christ? Or might they be going to a church? Then you might want to find out, well, who at the church is likely to know a businessman who might be a controller? And you would find that someone who's responsible for small groups or somebody who's working in men's ministry might be well connected within those. And so you have to develop a relationship and say, I'm looking for somebody, you know, somebody like that I can network with. Just running ads isn't the way to necessarily do it. We find that association directors, because we do searches nationwide, tend to be very helpful to us. But we also have a database of a lot of people that we network with. So, for example, when I do a search, I will oftentimes send it to John and say, John, I'm doing this search. Do you know anybody like this? So you need to develop your own list of where you're looking to find candidates. The next one is going to be that question we had earlier about, are you applying enough resources? Do you have enough labor committed? Do you have enough dollars committed? For example, if you're looking at hiring someone who might not live locally, have you budgeted for the fact of relocation? Have you budgeted for the interview trips? The next aspect is going to be marketing. Yes, need to market in order to attract the right candidates. Now, in our process, we actually create a document we call the opportunity profile. And it's going to be like 7 or 8 pages long. If you were to go to our website at dingman.com and hit under searches, you would see the opportunity profile for the different searches that we're working on. There's several reasons why we take the time to create this document. One is because it will describe the position. Well, everybody does that. But it'll describe the organization. It'll describe the values. And it'll describe what it is we're looking for in a candidate. And then we will have created that mailing list of 300 people we're contacting. And we'll send it out to people. We'll say, we're doing this search. Do you know of anybody? And the reason we say, do you know of anybody, instead of are you interested in it, is because oftentimes it'll be sitting on their desk and their boss might walk in. And so if we say, do you know of anybody, then they don't get in hot water because maybe they're considering it. But to be able to give that document to them and then they take it home to their spouse and their spouse says, hey, they're talking about you. Can you see this? This is you. It really is a marketing document. People can relate to this so well. But you need to make sure it's not fluff. It's accurate. There's a tendency to be so specific on the things you're looking for that you may be wanting somebody who can walk on water. So you have to be careful on that. Instead of always saying it has to be excellent, maybe some areas that they just have to be very good. So don't try and make it all superlatives and all the things that you're looking for in regards to that. Yes, John?
Is that a lot? Part of that's the job description, is it? Or what?
Yes, the job description is in this.
Okay.
Yeah.
What'd you call it?
Opportunity profile.
Opportunity profile.
Right.
Okay.
And also, it's a document you can then post in your own company so that your people can see what it is you're looking for. And they will feel good about how the company's described. They will feel more inclined to want to take it and give it to a friend. It makes everybody feel good about it, but it takes some time to write it. If you've got somebody who's good in your company at writing, you can probably give them the thoughts. If you want to just print out one of ours and say, this is what we're trying to do it like, feel free. It's important that you try and market for the position. So you have to have the right document, and you have to make sure you're really sending it out. You know, it's the fisherman with the net. If he takes the net and does a broadcast, he pulls in a lot of different fish. And he throws an awful lot of the stuff back. It's junk. It's just not good fish. You know, well, this one's oily, this one's bony, this one's whatever it is. And he just wants to end up with the keepers, the ones that are really good. Well, if you don't throw that fish in the right place and big enough, how are you going to end up with several good choices? So think of it that way. You're not trying to end up with one. You're not trying to get lucky. But you want to have a number of them so you can then choose from a position of strength. Another aspect is using the variety of methods. Newspaper ads is often a waste of time and a waste of money. And so did you find a number of ways to try and find these candidates? 80-90% of all jobs are filled via networking. Networking. It's not recruiters. It's not newspaper ads. It's networking. So if that's the most common way, then you shouldn't ignore that. But let me also say that when it comes to networking, they don't as often have a number of good candidates. So don't fall into that trap and only end up with one good candidate because you may not feel like you've really gotten the best one. But you need to have a variety of methods to go about that. So that's part of that plan that I was talking about. What is going to be your variety of methods that you're going to use? You need to think of that ahead of time. By the way, once you've done this plan on how you're going to do your search, hang on to that because the next time you have to do a search, you'll have a lot of your work done in regards to how to approach it. We should next know what the job's going to pay. Any well-managed organization will have a compensation range for position. You shouldn't say, I want to pay $60,000. I want to pay $150,000. But rather, you should have a range that's about 25 or 30% wide. Excuse me. There's several reasons for doing this. One, if you instead were to just say, I want to pay this amount, if somebody is above that, they're going to say, I don't know that I want to make a cut and pay. If somebody's below that, they say, oh, I can get a raise. Instead, if you have a salary range, you say, I want to pay between $120,000 and $150,000. I don't know what it's going to take to hire the right person. Then you have not made a commitment to them as to how much you're going to pay. Because you really want to negotiate that. And if you find somebody who's already 160 and it takes 160 to get them, but the top of your range is 150, you probably should do it if they're the right person. So the range is only a guideline. You can go above it, you can go below it, but it should be a good guideline. If you're talking to any HR consultant, they will recommend you have a salary range to deal with. Yes, John?
You know, they lots of times in ads, they put the salary range in there, you know, the potential and that kind of thing. What is your experience with, and maybe you haven't used it, but the internet sites, the monster.com and all that kind of stuff, in terms of finding candidates or even advertising paid salary ranges or whatever? You see that?
Yes. We've sometimes used monster.com. Okay. Sometimes have used ChristianJobs.com or Inacristo to try and find candidates for those. That is the lowest form of trying to find candidates versus directed. You've identified where the person might be because you know that this company is in a certain profession, so they're bound to have somebody in that position. So you call up and say, who's in that position, and call them up. I want to send you some information. What is your email? But on a monster.com, you will get an awful lot of garbage. And so you just have to understand that. I think it's poor form when you ask people to send a resume to also ask for their references at that point. Because a person should be protective of their references. until you've established a mutual interest level on both sides, I think it's inappropriate to ask for references. That's like going on a first date and saying, and how many kids do you want to have? Excuse me, we haven't established we're getting married yet. So it's there are good aspects with Monster.com and others like that. We tend not to use them. We haven't used Monster.com in a couple years now.
You probably don't get involved with the temp to firm kind of thing. But
no,
what do you see employers doing in that area?
We actually find that to be a good way when you are talking about hiring people in entry level up through middle management, because you have a chance to check them out and see if they're good, and if they are good, then convert them to permanent. We happen to be in a town where there's a very large pharmaceuticals company called Amgen, and no one can get into the company at those levels except through a temp company. They don't want to make a mistake, so they aren't going to hire somebody without testing them first by having them work for them for 3 to 6 months first. So temp companies are a good thing to try also. The next aspect of this is going to be, once you have a great candidate, don't lose them. Don't move too fast. Don't move too slow. You need to understand that they may be also looking at other opportunities, and if you take too long, you could lose them because they may lose interest in you, feeling you really aren't serious or you're indecisive. Had a client recently where he wanted to bring back the candidates for a second trip, but his schedule was such it was 2 months before he could bring them back for the second interview trip. And of the three candidates that came through the first interview session, two of them in the meantime took other jobs. So you need to make it a priority with your schedule to be available for the people when they come. Number 7, court the candidate. If they're coming in from out of town especially, make sure that you have dinner with them and show them housing and introduce them around. If this is the final trip, you're really thinking of hiring them, bring the spouse also. Make sure that you give them all the pieces of information they need so that if they go back with a job offer, they don't have anything that they are going to need to yet find out, like schools or churches or those sorts of things. Number 8 is going to be, at this point, the relationship is a very delicate fabric. Be careful not to tear it. If either side starts to make sounds like they have expectations that are unrealistic, it'll tear the credibility, it'll tear that fabric, and it'll be over. So, for example, if the candidate was making $120,000 and they now come in and say, I want $150,000, and there seems to be no evidence to suggest why they should be getting that big a boost, that could tear the relationship right there. Likewise, the other way around. They know that your salary range is such and such, and you just automatically come in with 20% below the bottom of that salary range, it could really tear that relationship. So there needs to be some sensitivity to the expectations on both sides. Then the last one I have is making them, proofing the offer. When you've made the offer, the job offer, it's a good idea to give them a little time to make up their minds. I think a little time is 1, 2, 3 days. I don't think it's 2 weeks, 3 weeks. And then also, it's a good idea to say, now what are you going to do when you go back to your company to tell them you're leaving? What are you going to say? One of the realities is if an employee goes into their employer and says, I'm leaving to take another job, their employer may want to keep them, and so they may offer them more money. But the employer may also feel like they've had a gun held to their head. They need them right now. They can't lose them right now, and so they'll pay them more money to keep them. They'll bribe them. But later on, they will feel like this person was disloyal, and they forced me to do what I had to do, but now I don't have to have them, so I can let them go now. Well, I tell that to the candidate. It's not a good idea to accept a counter offer. So try to proof your offer with them. Talk about, what if your employee makes you a counter offer? And that'll also tell you something about their conviction for taking your offer. So those are just 9 of the ways in which to find and hire candidates. There's actually a lot more than that, but we're sort of working with the nines. So why don't we move on now for questions that you could ask of candidates. The first question I think is a good one to ask is, what about this job excites you? Why is it you want this? Charlie, I'm going to ask you to turn it off for just a minute. There's something that I don't want to have on tape. You're Christians, and you're going to want people, they're going to have the right values.
Pause just a minute. Okay.
I think if you're looking for someone who's a truly great candidate, you're wanting someone who's excited about the job. That it's not just a job putting in their time. So I ask them, well, what excites you about this job? The next area I would ask them is, well, what areas of the job do we need to support you so you can be successful? What areas are not your strengths? What areas for you to be successful we have to help you with? If they're not going to be open and candid about this, then you aren't seeing someone who's being truthful with you. You may not know who it is you're getting. Say you're wanting a general manager, and they in this area say, well, you know, I really haven't studied accounting, and so I need a good controller who can work with that. I've dealt with budgets, but I really don't know the accounting aspect. That would be an answer in that area. So you can have varieties of answers, but that's a good question to ask. The next one I would say is, what situation should we not put you in? I tend to deal with dynamic leaders. So the most common response I get is, don't put me in a maintenance job. I want to make a difference. I want to keep growing. I want to keep improving an organization. But they should be able to be candid with you and tell you what type of situation they should not be put in. Another question is, what do you do to keep yourself sharp? If you're really looking for the best ones, they're going to be wanting to keep growing. They're going to stay sharp. They don't want to be behind the times. The next question is going to be, how do you balance the demands for time in your life? A lot of us have a problem with being, tending towards being workaholics. But yet the priorities in our life for our spiritual walk and our family should be very high. How does this candidate balance the demands for time in his life or her life? Are they open with you about this? Because it should be a real tension if they're a really dynamic go-getter. The next one are going to be, what types of people do not work well with you? There's a lot of people who will admit there are people that don't work well with them. People that don't work well with me, they say, if they're political, they don't want to stretch. They don't want to grow. They're not honest. They're lazy. Let's see if they really thought about what type of people don't work well with them. Another question would be, how much would your subordinates say you stretch them? We've covered that. Hopefully they say a lot, not just a little. The next one would be, what would people say you enjoy the most about your work? And that's similar to this. What gives you the greatest satisfaction? The reason I prefer the other wording is, enjoy the most about your work. I'm hoping they will say people. You know, if you're a leader, you're not just a single producer yourself. A leader means that you've got people underneath you. If you don't get great joy and satisfaction out of leading people, then there's going to be something missing out of your leadership. If they'll just say the challenge, the variety, getting results, but you don't hear them saying something about people, that should be a red flag for you. Another characteristic I find very insightful is, tell me about the characteristics in your present form of bosses that you did not like. I don't want their name. I just want the characteristics. And then I'll say, and what were the characteristics you did like? Now you're trying to match them up with you, right? So are the things they're talking about going to match with your style? For example, if they say, I liked a boss who gave me a lot of rope, and you tend to like to micromanage, we've got a disconnect. I like a boss who is very affirming to me, and it's not your tendency to give people a lot of attaboys or take the time to say you're doing a great job. Got a disconnect. So it's important to look at those responses to see whether or not it's going to be the right fit.